Riley, Gustafson, and Marchman had everyone up early the next morning. That was nothing unusual. Culhane had done the same thing, pushing the men of the posse at a pace as hard as he thought they could stand. Culhane was awake and able to drink a little coffee, although he refused to eat anything.
Y'all better just go ahead and leave me right here. I'll rest up for a few days and then I'll be ready to ride again.
You're in no shape to be left alone.
I'm in no shape to ride either.
He's right. If he stays in the saddle all day today, that wound is probably going to break open and start bleeding again. I'm not sure he can spare any more blood. What we need is a wagon.
That's right. If we had a wagon, we could make Mr. Culhane comfortable in it and get him to a settlement where there's a doctor without risking him bleeding to death.
There's bound to be a ranch or a farm somewhere around here where we can borrow a wagon or a buckboard.
I'm laying right here while you're debating my future, you know. You ain't got time to be hunting up a wagon so you can haul me around. You got a bunch of no-good outlaws to catch, remember?
We're not likely to forget about that. But we're not going to leave you here to die, either.
Gustafson walked up to the other side of the fire.
You're supposed to be getting ready to ride. What's the holdup over there?
The ranger's in no shape to ride. We're going to have to get a wagon for him.
Well, if you can snap your fingers and make one appear, Morgan, you go right ahead. Make it fast, because we're pulling out soon.
Despite what the kid had said the night before, Culhane's condition had made him change his mind.
No, I'm going to look for a ranch where I can borrow a wagon. Lace is going to stay here and take care of Culhane while I'm gone. Once we've tended to that, we'll catch up to you.
Wait just a minute. I don't recall telling you that you can make decisions for me, kid.
Then you go find the wagon and I'll stay here.
You two stop squabbling and listen to me. I'll be all right here by myself for a while. Just prop me up against a tree, leave me a canteen and a little food, and make sure my rifle and my revolver are in reach in case any wild critters come along. I won't need nobody watching over me.
Are you sure about that, Mr. Culhane?
Yes, ma'am. I am. I won't go to moving around and bust that bullet hole open again. You got my word on that.
In that case, I'm going with the posse. You can find the wagon, kid.
Are you sure about that?
Just as sure as Mr. Culhane is that he'll be all right.
The kid saw that it wasn't going to do a bit of good to argue with her. The lure of the $10,000 reward for Warren Latch, plus the bounties on the heads of the other outlaws, was too much for Lace to resist. For a second, he considered offering to make up the lost bounties from Conrad Browning's riches. He could even double them and never miss the money. But if he did that, she was liable to spit in his face, and he knew it. Lace McCall's pride was a powerful thing.
All right. Be careful.
Aren't I always?
Not really.
Lace just grinned back at him. And that was the problem. She was going to be part of a posse led by a man who had quite possibly been driven mad by grief and pain, followed by a lot of other men who were also consumed with the need for vengeance. Time was running out on them. That could cause even sane, level-headed men to do foolish things. In the case of Vent Riley, Abel Gustafson, and Ed Marchman, well, there was just no telling what they might do. No telling at all.
I'll catch up as soon as I can.
He worried that might not be soon enough. Where there were cows, there were people who owned those cows, was a good rule of thumb. So when the kid came across cattle grazing in a small valley densely carpeted with grass, he knew he was close to a ranch. He had ridden northeast when he left the posse toward a settlement called Bandera. Culhane had told him it was large enough that several doctors could probably be found there. If it turned out to be necessary, the kid would ride all the way there, find one of the doctors, and take him back to Culhane at gunpoint if he had to. However, he didn't want to do that. It would take longer and delay him in rejoining the posse. His hope was to find someone willing to fetch Culhane and take him to the settlement. The kid rode closer to the cattle and checked the brand burned into the hide of a rangy old steer. It was an arrowhead shape with the number 7 inside it. The Arrowhead 7, he supposed the ranch was called. He was wondering how to go about finding the ranch headquarters when a rifle went off somewhere not far off. The bullet didn't come close enough for him to hear it, but he had a hunch it was a warning shot directed at him. The sound of hoofbeats from his right made him turn in that direction. A couple of riders were coming fast toward him. He left his Winchester in the saddle boot and kept his hand well away from his Colt as the men approached. That was taking a chance, but they had fired only one shot. He didn't think they wanted to kill him. As they rode up to him, the men split up so they could cover him better. They were relatively young, but didn't look like greenhorns. Taking note of their coppery skin and high cheekboned faces, the kid realized with a certain amount of surprise that they were Indians. They wore typical range clothes any white or black cowboy might wear.
Mister, if you're thinking about rustling that stock, you can just forget about it.
The man had a rifle out, and the kid figured he was the one who had fired the shot. The other man had a rifle with him, but it was still resting snugly in the saddle boot.
Rustling was the farthest thing from my mind. I'm not looking for trouble. I need help. A friend of mine is wounded a few miles from here. I'm looking for a wagon and somebody to take him to a doctor.
That's an interesting story, but how do we know it's true?
I can't prove it, but my friend's a Texas Ranger. He gave me this to show to anybody I came across that they needed convincing.
He reached into his shirt pocket, aware the two men were watching him closely, and took out Colhane's badge. He extended his hand with the silver star in a circle lying on his palm.
That's a ranger badge, all right, Tom.
Yeah, and where'd he get it? He could have killed the ranger and taken it off his body.
I give you my word, I'm telling the truth.
Chuck, you ride back and tell Pa what's going on. I'll go with this man and see about this so-called friend of his.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, you're not the ramrod of this outfit, are you? Do what I told you.
Bring the wagon back with you. You'll need it for Ranger Culhane.
Tom?
Yeah, bring the wagon, just in case he's telling the truth. Where exactly is it we're headed?
The kid had been keeping track of landmarks as he rode. He turned in the saddle and pointed.
Past a hogback ridge, between a couple flat-topped hills, through a valley and along a creek for about a half mile or so.
That's not a creek. That's the Medina River.
All right, then. Right there on the Medina River, where it makes a bend between a pair of bluffs.
I can find the place. You sure you want me to go, Tom?
Get a move on.
Chuck wheeled his horse and rode away.
Let's go.
He kept his rifle out, balancing it across the saddle in front of him as they rode.
My name's Morgan.
Tom Lame Deer. I'm the foreman on the Arrowhead 7. My father owns the spread. In case you're wondering about a bunch of Redskins dressing like white men and running a ranch, we're Cherokee. Pa came over here from East Texas about 20 years ago.
I wasn't wondering.
The kid had run into some renegade Apaches in the recent past, but he'd never had any dealings with the Cherokee. He recalled hearing that the tribe was peaceful and had a large reservation up in what was now called Oklahoma.
My people have always been farmers and ranchers. That is, the ones who weren't doctors and lawyers and businessmen and teachers.
Your father wouldn't happen to be a doctor as well as a rancher, would he?
No, but if you're telling the truth, we can take your ranger friend to Bandera. There are several good doctors there.
That's good to hear.
What happened to your friend, anyway?
He was shot in the leg. We were with a posse chasing a gang of outlaws that destroyed a town a good ways west of here. A place called Fire Hill.
Never heard of it. But that doesn't mean anything, I reckon. I never got out that way much.
The outlaws ambushed us. Several men were killed and some others wounded. But Culhane was too bad off to travel. I decided to get some help for him.
What about the rest of the posse?
They went on after Latch.
Warren Latch?
That's right. You heard of him?
I reckon everybody in this part of Texas has heard of him. If you've got an unruly kid who won't settle down at night, you tell him that if he doesn't go to sleep, Warren Latch will come and get him. Either that or the devil. I think more folks are scared of Latch.
Maybe with good reason.
So this posse chased him all the way from out in West Texas and is still on his trail?
That's right.
They must be pretty determined to catch him.
He destroyed their town and killed a lot of their loved ones. They're not going to turn back. They're not even going to slow down.
That was what worried him more than anything else. With Vint Riley in command, backed up by Abel Gustafson and Ed Marchman, the posse might charge foolishly into another trap. Lace might try to talk some sense into them, but those three would never listen to a woman, even one like Lace. The kid was convinced of that. When they reached what the kid had thought was a creek but was really the Medina River, it didn't take them long to find the spot where he had left Culhane. The ranger, who was propped up against a tree as he had requested, with blankets behind his back to cushion him, lifted a hand in greeting as the two riders approached.
It didn't take you long, kid. Who's that with you?
His name's Tom Lame Deer. His father owns a ranch a few miles from here.
Lame Deer, huh? Cherokee?
That's right, sir. Are you really a Texas Ranger?
You bet I am. Morgan there showed you my badge, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. You shot through the leg?
Yeah. Reckon it wouldn't have been too bad if I hadn't nicked something that made me bleed like a stuck hog. This young fella and his lady friend saved my life.
It looks like you were telling me the truth. I'm glad I sent Chuck back for the wagon.
Who's Chuck?
My little brother. Also works on the ranch. We all do. There are 7 of us in the family. That's what my father called it, the Arrowhead 7.
Tom gestured at the bandage wrapped around the ranger's leg.
You want me to take a look at that?
Miss McCall changed the dressing on it just before she left with the posse, so I reckon it'll be all right for a little while longer.
We'll have you to the doctor in Bandera in a couple hours. Wait a minute. You said this woman went with the posse?
She's a bounty hunter. She's after Warren Latch.
And you just let her go? You're supposed to care about her, and you let her go after a man like Latch?
Lace makes her own decisions. Nothing I could have told her would have changed her mind. And if I'd tried to forbid her from going or anything like that, it would have just made her more determined than ever.
Maybe so, but why didn't you tell her you love her and ask her not to risk her life like that?
The simple question hit the kid like a punch in the gut. Why hadn't he told Lace that he loved her? For one thing, he wasn't sure he did. He cared about her, certainly, cared deeply. But love? He had loved his wife. He didn't know if what he felt for Lace McCall was the same thing. But he didn't know that it wasn't either. He ignored Tom's question and changed the subject.
You'll stay here until your brother gets back with the wagon?
Sure. You're going after the posse?
Darn right he is. And he ain't gonna waste any time about it either, are you, kid?
Nope. You'll take care of my pack horse, too. I'll come back to your ranch and get it later. If I don't come back, he's yours. The trail led southeast?
Yeah, towards San Antonio, just like it has for the past few days. I heard Riley and them others talking about it. I never thought I'd see Riley taking over like that. I wasn't even sure he'd live this long.
If he runs into Latch, he may not live much longer. So long, Ranger. Tom, I'm much obliged for your help.
Wait a minute. This gang of outlaws, they're headed for San Antonio?
That's what we think.
I can cut some time and distance off your trail if you'll trust me.
You haven't given me any reason not to so far. Which way should I go?
Cross the river and follow it for a couple miles. You'll see what looks like a blind canyon. Follow it, and you'll find that it's really not. There's a trail at the far end that leads over a ridge. It's pretty rough, but a man on horseback can make it. On the other side of the ridge, turn east again on the trail you'll find there. That'll save you a good 5 miles of twists and turns that'll slow down a big group. You might even get ahead of Latch's bunch, although I can't promise that.
I'm obliged to you again, Tom.
Good luck, Morgan.
The kid lifted a hand in farewell. He was going to need that luck. A worrisome premonition had started to stir ever since Tom Lame Deer had asked that question about Lace. Even with luck and a shortcut, he wasn't sure he was going to make it in time. Tom Lame Deer's directions turned out to be good ones. The kid found the blind canyon without any trouble, and at the far end of it, just as Tom had told him, was a narrow trail that led up a steep, rocky bluff. The sure-footed Buckskin climbed the trail without the kid having to dismount. They descended the ridge on the other side and came to the well-defined trail Tom had mentioned. It ran almost due east and west. The kid turned east. He hadn't ridden along it very far when he heard gunfire in the distance. The kid stiffened in the saddle. A lot of possible explanations for somebody shooting flashed through his mind, but his gut told him none of them applied except one. The members of the posse were battling for their lives against Warren Latch's gang of ruthless killers. Yeah! The kid heeled the Buckskin into a run and leaned forward in the saddle to urge more speed out of the horse. The Buckskin responded with its usual gallantry, stretching its legs and eating up the ground. Riding around some rocks, he saw that the trail merged with a smaller trail from the northwest. That was the route the others had been following, he realized. Tom Lame Deer had been wrong about getting ahead of Latch's gang or the posse. Obviously, they were still ahead of the kid. Not for long, though. He followed the trail through a couple of more bends and spotted puffs of powder smoke coming from behind small boulders and brush along the base of a bluff to his right. He reined in for a quick assessment of the layout. To the left was a much thicker stand of trees, and shots were coming from that direction, too. The sight of several men and horses lying motionless on the ground told the kid what had happened. Latch's men had hidden in the trees, and the posse had ridden right in front of them like targets in a shooting gallery. Those who were still alive were pinned down in sparse cover against the bluff, and it was only a matter of time until the outlaws picked them all off. The kid pulled back behind some rocks, hoping none of Latch's men had spotted him. he might be able to work around behind them and catch them in a crossfire. Another possibility was circling to the top of the bluff. It would give him the high ground and a better angle for firing at the men hidden in the trees. Either way, the odds were against him and the posse. As many as half a dozen men had been cut down in the ambush. Lace hadn't been among the victims. He would have spotted her red hair if she had been hit. Hoping she was still all right, he figured it was just a question of keeping her that way. Trying to reach a quick decision on his best course of action, time unexpectedly ran out on him. Suddenly, men on horseback emerged from the rocks and charged straight toward the trees where the outlaws were hidden. The unmistakable figure of the heavily bandaged Vint Riley was in the lead. The posse men never had a chance. A wave of lead sized through the suicidal charge. Men and horses fell, spouting blood from their wounds. It wasn't a fight anymore. It was murder. It was exactly the sort of foolhardy, revenge-driven stunt the kid had expected Riley to pull. The man was too crazed by his need for vengeance to think straight. He was willing to charge right into the guns of Latch's men for a chance to kill some of them, and somehow he had convinced the other men in the posse to go along with him. Or some of them, anyway. The kid didn't think all the men had followed Riley. He still hadn't seen Lace or Nick Burton. Maybe they were taking cover in the rocks and brush along the base of the bluff. If that was true, they were in a bad spot. The outlaws would probably try to wipe them out. All the men who had charged the gang were down. A few were only wounded and tried to scramble back to cover, but their bodies jerked grotesquely as more slugs thudded into them. They slumped back to the ground, either dead or dying. A few futile shots came from the members of the posse who hadn't joined the charge, but they weren't enough to provide any cover for their wounded companions. No bullets had come the kid's way, so he thought there was a good chance he hadn't been spotted. He wheeled the buckskin and raced back the way he had come, searching for a way to get to the top of the bluff. He found a path a moment later and sent the buckskin plunging up it. Quickly, the slope became too steep for the horse. The kid leaped out of the saddle, dragging the Winchester with him, and started up the rest of the way on foot. Reaching the top of the bluff, he hurried along it, staying low so he wouldn't be skylighted. He stopped at a spot above where the remaining members of the posse were huddled behind the skimpy cover. The kid went to his belly and thrust the rifle over the edge of the bluff. He couldn't see the outlaws in the trees, but an occasional glimpse of movement was enough to give him their general location. Sighting on one, he took aim. Without waiting to see the results, he shifted his sights at another spot where something moved. Feeling he had enough for one more shot, he switched his aim again. He ducked back just in time. Before return fire angled up at the top of the bluff, rocks, dirt, and dust flew in the air where bullets chewed up the rim. Latch's men could shoot like that all day without touching him. While waiting for the outlaws to get tired of wasting ammunition, the kid took fresh cartridges from his pocket and thumbed them through the Winchester's loading gate. When the Winchester was fully loaded again, he slid forward, came up on a knee, and swung the rifle from left to right. That was enough for the outlaws. A few moments later, the kid heard a swift rattle of many hoofbeats across the way. He risked a look and saw dust boiling up on the far side of the trees as the gang fled. He wondered for a second if it might be a trick, then decided it wasn't. There were too many horses for that. Latch had hit the posse with all the men he had left, and they were all lighting a shuck out of there. The kid hurried back down the path to the spot where he had left the buckskin. He swung up into the saddle and headed for the trail that led in front of the bluff. The Winchester was out and ready to fire if he needed it. As he rode the buckskin toward the rocks at the base of the bluff, two men ran out from behind them. The kid swung the rifle toward them for a second before he recognized them as Thad and Bill Gustafson.
Mr. Morgan! Are you the one who ran those varmints off?
You know it had to be him, Thad. Who else could it have been?
The kid dismounted and let the buckskin's reins dangle.
We better check these men. Some of them might still be alive.
He started toward the members of the posse who had fallen during the ill-fated charge. That wasn't the case with the first half dozen he came to. When the kid rolled Abel Gustafson onto his back, he saw that his shirt was blood-soaked and had sightless eyes. He had been shot at least three times in the chest.
We told him not to go out there. But Riley said it was the only way, that the last chance to settle the score for everything we'd all lost.
Paul said he didn't care anymore. He
He just wanted to kill some outlaws. Now he's...
The kid left them to their grief and moved on to some of the other men. They were dead too, some of them from Fire Hill, others cowpunchers from the MB Connected. But he still didn't see Lace or Nick.
Where's Nick and Miss McCall?
Bill dragged the back of his hand across his eyes to wipe away some of the tears he couldn't hold back.
Latch has got him, I reckon.
Latch? Posse got scattered when the shooting started. I saw Nick's horse go down and so did Miss McCall. I don't think they were hit, though, just thrown clear. Some of Latch's men came out of the trees and got them while the rest of the bunch laid down covering fire. They dragged him back into the trees.
The kid didn't need any more explanation than that. Latch had seen the opportunity to grab a couple of hostages and had seized it. He might not even have realized at the time that Lace was a woman, and he certainly hadn't been aware that Nick was the grandson of a wealthy rancher. All the luck seemed to have swung back around to Latch's side.
How many men do we have left?
Come on out, fellas.
Three men emerged from cover. Two of them were MB Connected hands. The third man was Ed Marchman, which came as a surprise to the kid. He'd expected to find Marchman among the dead men. He had already seen Clyde Fenner and Jack Hogan, both of them shot to ribbons. The kid started to say something, then decided to let it go. Marchman might not be much good, but at least he was a warm body and another gun.
Let's round up some of the horses that weren't hurt in the shooting. We don't want Latch to get too far ahead of us.
My God! You're still going after him? There are only six of us. He probably has three times that many men.
I don't care. He's got Lace and Nick, and I'm not going to let anything happen to them if I can stop it.
Well, you're crazy. Let's just go to San Antonio and tell the law there what's happened. Let them handle it. That's their job. We've ridden more than 100 miles, and what's it gotten us? Just a bunch of dead men.
It was your decision to come along, just like it was your decision to throw in with Riley after Culhane was wounded.
Well, what was I supposed to do? What would you have done differently?
I wouldn't have paraded right in front of Latch's guns without doing some scouting first, for one thing.
Disgust welled up inside the kid as he shook his head and turned away.
Forget it. It's too late to change anything now. All we can do is go after Latch and try to rescue those prisoners.
I won't do it, I tell you. I'm going...
Do whatever you damn well please. I'm going after those outlaws, and any of you who want to can come with me.
We're with you, Mr. Morgan.
Damn right.
So are we, Morgan. The old man would have our hides if we didn't bring Nick back to him safe and sound.
The kid looked to his right to see that Vint Riley was pushing himself up on an elbow. The kid found himself standing over Riley, booted feet widespread, the Winchester in his hand pointing down at the bandaged man. Blood seeped from the bullet graze underneath the torn bandage on his head. Riley had been wounded in the charge and fell unconscious. The outlaws hadn't shot him again because they thought he was dead. The kid could see all that plain as day. Riley looked up and saw the intention in the kid's eyes.
Go ahead, Morgan. You think I give a damn anymore?
Don't do it, Morgan. It'd be murder.
Murder? After the way he led all these good men to their deaths? Sounds more like justice to me.
It might not be murder, but I bet you'd regret it, Mr. Morgan.
This ain't the kind of thing you do.
For a long moment, the kid stared down at the defiant Riley. Then he turned away. As much as he wanted to blow a hole in the loco son of a bitch, the others were right. If he did, he'd regret it later. Without turning back around, he jerked his head toward Riley.
Somebody help him up.
Let me give you a hand, Vint.
Riley stubbornly ignored him. He hauled himself to his feet, felt around inside his pockets, and produced the little brown bottle of painkiller. Taking hold of the buckskin's reins, the kid mounted up.
I'll catch some of those horses that scattered during the ambush. Get as much ammunition as you can carry and maybe some extra guns.
Scavenge from the dead, you mean?
I can't think of anything better to do with their bullets than using them on the men who killed them.
Morgan's got a point there. Come on.
It didn't take long for the kid to catch six horses and bring them back to the survivors of the ambush. Seven men now, including him, against nearly three times that many.
They're less than an hour ahead of us, but they'll be moving fast. We'll have to move faster.
They picked up the trail on the other side of the trees where the outlaws had hidden. After a half mile or so, the tracks curved back to the main trail, which soon ran into an actual road.
I think this is the road between Pandera and San Antone. I remember coming this way once a few years ago.
I think you're right.
They'll make better time now.
The kids' hopes of catching up to the outlaws before they reached San Antonio were sinking. The posse could push the horses only so hard without riding the animals into the ground, which would allow Latch and his men to get away for sure. And he couldn't stop thinking about what Tom Lame Deer had said earlier, about what he should have said to Lace before they parted. The kid hadn't been a praying man for a long time, but at that moment, he was praying that Lace was still all right.
Squirm a little more, why don't you, darling? I don't mind at all.
His arm was wrapped around Lace's waist as she perched on the horse's back in front of the saddle. From time to time, his arm slid up far enough to feel the warm pressure of her breasts.
Sooner or later, I'll kill you, mister. Count on it.
I won't hold my breath waiting, if you don't mind.
Latch had already told him he could keep the redhead once they reached San Antonio. The youngster was a different story. Foolishly, he had let slip that he was the grandson of the rancher whose money the gang had stolen out of the stage station safe at Fire Hill. They had already taken a considerable amount of old Marcus Burton's money. There was no reason they shouldn't have more of it in the form of ransom for the boy, Latch decided. Of course, even if the old man paid the ransom, the boy was doomed. Duval knew. Latch would take particular pleasure in blowing the whelp's brains out, probably with one of those fancy foreign guns of his. The boy was riding in front of one of the other men. Duval hadn't been sure about the idea of setting up another ambush for the posse after the previous attempts to wipe them out had failed. But Latch had been insistent, and of course, there was no use arguing with him. And it had worked. A few of those stubborn bastards might still be alive, but not enough to come after Latch and his men. Whoever was left of the posse could limp back to the ruins of their homes and try to pick up the shattered pieces of their lives. Duval would have liked one more shot at the man on top of that bluff who had forced them to light out before the massacre was complete. But he supposed that in the long run, it didn't really matter. By the end of the day, whoever was left of the gang would be in San Antonio, and the chase would be over. And he would have the redhead to amuse himself with for a while, until he grew tired of her and sold her to the madam at one of the houses along the river.
You see, Slim? It's just a matter of proper planning. That's what it takes for a successful operation.
You're right, Warren. That ambush you set up went off slick as it could be. Too bad we didn't manage to kill all of them.
It doesn't matter. There can't be more than two or three of them left alive. They're no threat to us.
Duval felt a little shudder go through the woman he held so tightly. Maybe her lover had been among the men who had been killed back there. He hoped so. He didn't mind a little spirit in a woman. But if she knew nobody was going to come after her, she would be easier to handle. Making good time, the gang moved at an easy lope over the road. As they came around a bend, however, Latch abruptly raised a hand to signal a stop. Several hundred yards ahead of them, moving slowly along the road, were a dozen freight wagons.
Well, well, what's this?
Nothing we need to bother with, Warren. We can leave the road and get around them. They'll never even see us.
Ignoring his second-in-command's suggestion, Latch took a pair of field glasses from his saddlebags and lifted them to his eyes.
Those wagons are empty. Just as I expected since they're on their way to San Antonio, the drivers have already made their deliveries and collected the money that was due for the goods they carried.
Which can't amount to much compared to the loot we've already got. Holding them up would be a waste of time, Warren. Not to mention running a risk that we don't need.
You think I'm afraid of a bunch of teamsters? I was born to lead men into battle.
That's exactly what I mean. Hitting those wagons would be a waste of your time and talents. It's beneath you, Warren.
Latch turned in his saddle to look back along the line of men, less than half as many as had started out a couple of weeks earlier. Their faces were impassive, and none of them had said anything. They all knew Latch was half loco. They would do whatever he told them to do.
Fortune has begun smiling on us again. It wouldn't be wise to turn our backs on Fortune's smile.
You want to hit those wagons, we'll hit them.
Latch smiled as he stowed away the field glasses and drew his left-hand Mauser.
We'll take our time until we get closer. Then we'll hit them and hit them hard.
You're gonna die.
Maybe. But you're gonna be right in front of me, honey child.
The kid let the men stop and rest their horses for a few minutes every now and then, but for the most part, he kept them moving as fast as he dared. His eyes constantly scanned the wooded, hilly terrain around and in front of them. He didn't think Latch would attempt another ambush so close to the gang's goal, but if this remnant of the posse rode into a trap, that would be the end of them, no doubt about it. Their only chance was to take Latch and his men by surprise and kill enough of the outlaws in the first strike to make the odds closer to even. So when the kid heard gunfire up ahead, it surprised him. He had figured Latch's bunch wouldn't slow down until they reached San Antonio. But every instinct in his body told him they were responsible for those shots. The kid reined in and paused long enough to pull his Winchester from its saddle sheath. He motioned for the other men to do likewise.
That's gotta be Latch. Maybe the gang ran into some trouble. If they did, it's a break for us. We'll see if we can't turn the tide against them. But be careful, they still got Nick and Miss McCall with them.
Don't worry about those prisoners. Just kill as many outlaws as you see.
Mister, why don't you just shut the hell up? You think you're the only one who suffered? The only one who lost somebody? My brother and me lost both our folks and our sisters. And you're the one who got my pa killed. You and your beating the drums for revenge all the time.
Thad, take it easy.
Easy? Ah, Riley's as loco as Warren Latch is. We shouldn't have even brought him with us. He'll find a way to get us all killed.
No, he won't. If he tries, I'll shoot him myself. You hear that, Riley?
I hear you. You don't scare me, Morgan. You can't hurt me.
We might just see about that. Come on, we're wasting time.
All seven of the men pounded down the road toward the sound of the gunshots. Several minutes later, they came in sight of a line of freight wagons stopped along the road. Gun smoke spurted from the backs of the wagons, where the teamsters had taken cover behind the thick sideboards. They were firing at men on horseback who raced back and forth, blazing away at the wagons, like Indians attacking a train of immigrants.
That's him!
Digging his heels into his horse's flanks, Riley sent the animal lunging forward.
Mr. Morgan!
For once, Riley's done the right thing. Let's get him!
He urged the buckskin into a pounding run behind Riley. The other men strung out behind him. The outlaws had their attention focused on the wagons and didn't see the new threat approaching rapidly from behind them. They had Latch's men in a trap. The kid's eyes searched for a flash of red hair but didn't find it. He didn't see Nick Burton either. The two of them had to be there somewhere. The alternative was unthinkable. Until he could find them, the kid could gun down those outlaws without having to worry about hitting the prisoners. Ahead of him, Riley opened fire with his pistol before he was in good range, his desire for revenge getting the better of him again. The kid brought his rifle to his shoulder. Even though firing from the back of a running horse played hell with the man's accuracy, he still brought down one of them. Finally realizing the trouble they were in, some of the outlaws whirled and fired at the charging riders. The kid quickly changed his aim. A man threw up his hands and pitched from the saddle. Close enough for handgun work, the kid jammed the Winchester back in the saddle boot and palmed out his Colt. The Teamsters had put up a lot stouter defense than Latch had expected. They had downed some of the outlaws already, and as dust roiled, the kid and his companions brought down more. The fighting was fierce, but not without paying a price. The kid saw Vint Riley jerk in the saddle, and a bullet punched through his burned body. He stayed on his horse, charged straight toward two outlaws, still firing as he thundered toward them. He was hit again and then again, but he kept going. The outlaws finally broke in fear of the bandaged apparition coming toward them. It was too late. Riley blasted them off their horses before he tumbled off his own mount and rolled over and over on the ground. The kid whirled the buckskin and shot an outlaw in the throat. Turning the buckskin again, the kid saw that Ed Marchman was down, but not dead. He pushed himself up and fired his pistol at the remaining outlaws. Marchman might be a jackass, but at that moment, he didn't lack for courage. Thad and Bill Gustafson were right in the middle of the fight, too, their rifles cracking as they fired shot after shot. They fought with a fierce intensity. Not loco, like Riley, but clearly determined to avenge the deaths of their loved ones. Then, suddenly, it was over. All the outlaws were down. The rugged-looking Teamsters emerged from their wagons, carrying their rifles.
Are you men rangers?
No, but we're what's left of a posse that's been on the trail of these outlaws. This was Warren Latch's bunch.
Latch? You mean we actually beat Warren Latch's gang?
That's right. But I don't see Latch himself among them. He must have lit out when the attack didn't go like he expected it to.
Not all the outlaws were dead, the kid realized, as one of the bloody figures on the ground suddenly rolled onto his side. Instantly, half a dozen rifles covered the man. The kid quickly dismounted and motioned for the men to give him room. With his Colt still in his hand, he knelt next to the wounded outlaw.
Who are you, mister?
Slim Duval.
He looked like he'd been shot at least twice in the belly. He didn't have much time left.
Where's Latch, Duval?
I don't know. He ran out on us. We never turned on him. No matter how loco he got. Then he double-crossed us.
Then you won't mind telling me where to find him. You had a couple of prisoners, a woman and a young man.
Latch took them with him, along with all the loot. I never thought he'd do something like that.
No honor among thieves, huh? Tell me where to find him. Where does he go in San Antonio?
I don't know.
Well, you'd better think hard, because if you can't help me find Latch and those prisoners, I don't have any reason not to kill you right now.
The kid put the revolver's barrel under Duval's chin and pressed it into his throat as blood leaked from a corner of the outlaw's mouth. San Antonio was beautiful at night. The lights of the sprawling city stretched for a long way. Downtown, along the river, and near the ruins of the old mission called the Alamo, the sounds of happy patrons drifted through the open doorways of the numerous saloons. The warm night air was filled with the scent of flowers, although the stink of decay from the river lay underneath the more pleasant smells. The house was built in the Spanish style, with a red tile roof and an adobe wall around it. A black wrought iron gate opened into a garden. The kid didn't try to open the gate. He went over the wall, dropping lightly into a shrub-bordered flower bed on the other side. His black trousers, shirt, and hat helped him blend into the darkness. The Colt's handle, with its ivory grips, was the only bit of light about him, and he had his hand wrapped around it. A balcony with iron railings overlooked the garden. As the kid approached stealthily, he heard a door open. Pausing in the shadow of a thick shrub, he knelt and looked up. A man stepped out onto the balcony and walked to the railing. He rested one hand on the rail, and the other lifted a cigar to his mouth. As he took a deep drag on the cigar, the coal at its end glowed brightly, casting a faint light over his face. From the darkness below, the kid saw the lean features, the jutting beard, the deep-set eyes. He knew without being told that he was looking at Warren Latch. The outlaw leader wore a pair of military-style holsters. The odd-shaped butts of the guns were visible in the light spilling through the open door behind him. The pistols were some sort of foreign make, the kid guessed, since he had never seen anything quite like them before. It didn't matter. Latch could have a damned Gatling gun, and it wouldn't matter. One shot would have ended it simply. From where the kid crouched, he could have put a bullet through Latch's head, and the man would never know what ended his life. But the kid didn't know where Lace and Nick were. If he killed Latch and then searched the house, only to find that the prisoners weren't there, he would be at a dead end. No, Latch got to live a little while longer, until he told the kid what he wanted to know. Latch stood there smoking his cigar for several minutes, then dropped the butt, ground it under a booted toe, and kicked it off the balcony into the garden. He turned and went back into the house, closing the door behind him. The kid stole forward, swiftly and silently. The pillars supporting the balcony had enough scrollwork to provide a few handholds and footholds. He struggled up one of the pillars until he could reach over his head and grasp the iron railing. From there, it was easy to pull himself onto the balcony. A couple of large windows glowed a warm yellow with lamplight from the room where Latch had gone. The kid crouched and tried to peer through a corner of one. A gauzy curtain covered the window. He was able to see a little through the loosely woven curtain and could tell Latch was standing in front of someone sitting in an armchair. That close to the window, he realized it was raised a few inches to let in the night breezes.
You're never going to get away with this, you son of a bitch.
That's where you're wrong, my dear. No one knows where I am or the name I use while I'm here in San Antonio. This house belongs to Stephen Dandridge, the somewhat decadent but law-abiding son of a wealthy businessman from Louisiana. I've put quite a bit of time and effort into cultivating that identity.
And nobody ever notices that you look like Warren Latch?
A lot of men are tall and slender and have beards. Besides, people see what they expect to see.
Well, what are you going to do now?
If you're worried that I'm going to molest you, you needn't be. My interests along those lines are few and rather specialized. But I know several men who will be quite taken with you. I thought I would invite them over and have them, place bids on the pleasure of your company.
You're going to auction me off like a horse?
Between what I make from you and the ransom I expect to get for the young man locked up downstairs, I should clear a nice bit of money. Since I no longer have to share the other loot I brought back with me, I'll have a small fortune to sustain my lifestyle for an extended period of time.
Which you got by double-crossing your men.
I think my friend Slim was getting a bit tired of riding with me. And to tell you the truth, I had grown tired of him. As for the others, well, they were just common outlaws. I can round up 100 more like them if I ever decide to form another gang. After all, I'm Warren Latch. Everyone wants to work with me because I'm always successful. And everyone is afraid of me because I'm insane, you know?
The laugh that came from Latch made a chill go through the kid as he suddenly realized it was all an act. Latch didn't sound the least bit crazy. It was fake, just like the identity of Stephen Dandridge that he had established. Warren Latch, the mad dog, don't cross Warren Latch, he's loco, he'll kill you as quick as look at you. All a lie to cover up pure evil. The kid had heard enough. Gun in hand, he stepped to the door and kicked it open. Latch whirled, hands going to the butts of his guns. But he stopped short as he found himself staring down the barrel of the kid's Colt.
Kid! He told me you were dead, but I didn't believe him. I never did.
Her hands were tied tightly in front of her. Another rope around her waist bound her to the chair. An ugly bruise stood out on her jaw. At that moment, the kid came very close to pulling the trigger and killing Latch. But he held off. If Lace was the one who turned Latch over to the law, she would get the reward for it. That's what she had set out to achieve, and the kid was going to make that possible if he could.
You're from that posse.
That's right. You didn't wipe us all out. Half a dozen more are on their way in, but I raced ahead to settle things with you.
How the devil did you find me?
Slim Duval wasn't quite dead when we caught up to him.
Slim didn't know where I live or the name I use here.
No, but he knew how to get a message to you. He knew about the girl who works at Flores Cantina, who knew about the livery man, who knew about the priest, who told me about the man named Dandridge, who always makes generous contributions to the mission. Wasn't that hard to find you, once Duval started me on the right trail.
He's dead, you say?
That's right.
Good. He used to be a good man, but he'd gotten sloppy. Lazy. He had it coming.
Lace, are you all right?
Yeah. I've been knocked around a little, but I'm fine.
How about Nick?
Tied and gagged in the pantry off the kitchen downstairs. He's all right, too, as far as I know. That arm wound may need some attention.
It'll get plenty of attention soon. Can you get loose?
I don't think so. I've been trying to loosen these ropes, but the knots are too tight.
When I've finished with Latch, I'll cut you loose.
You're finished now, my friend.
I don't know how you figure that.
A wise man knows how to spend his money. I've spent some of mine on men whose job it is to keep an eye on that girl at the cantina. If anyone comes around asking her the wrong sort of questions, they follow and find out who it is. They're standing behind you now.
You don't really expect
me to... Kid, look out!
Instinct sent him twisting down and to the side. He felt a bullet tug at his shirt sleeve. From the corner of his eye, he saw two men on the balcony, one white, one Mexican. A slug tore into the expensive rug only inches from the kid's hand as he braced himself and fired. One of the men doubled over as the bullet punched into his belly. The other man weaved to the side as the kid triggered again. But he wasn't fast enough. The bullet hit him in the temple. Suddenly, bullets chewed up the rug as the kid rolled desperately away from them. Latch had yanked out one of his funny-looking pistols. The boss's gun ran dry, but he already had the second pistol in his other hand. Before he could bring it to bear, Lace drew up her legs and kicked him in the back of the knees. Latch's legs folded up beneath him and he fell. Before he could bring up his gun, the kid brought up his Colt and pulled the trigger.
Is he dead?
The kid stood and walked over to Warren Latch. He was lying on his back, a dark pool of blood spreading around him. The kid lined his sights on the top of Latch's head.
No doubt about it.
The Minger Hotel, one of the finest hostelries in San Antonio, was practically next door to the Alamo. The kid and Lace were sitting in its lobby a week later when Asa Colhane came through the front doors and walked toward them using a cane. Nick Burton was with the ranger. The kid got to his feet to shake hands with Colhane.
You look like you're getting around pretty well. Better than I expected, as bad a shape as you were in.
Yeah, well, I'm a tough old bird. I heal fast, like this youngster here.
Nick's wounded arm was in a sling, but his color was good, and he seemed to be feeling fine. He was dressed in a town suit.
Ranger Colhane called me and told me he was coming over here to see you, Mr. Morgan. I thought I'd come along so I could say goodbye to you and Miss McCall.
Nick and Colhane sat down in a pair of comfortable armchairs facing the sofa where the kid and Lace sat.
You're headed back to your grandfather's ranch?
That's right. Thad and Bill are going with me. They decided they didn't want to try and make a go of their family's ranch after everything that happened there, so they're going to let that neighbor of theirs pay them off for it. I told them there were jobs waiting for them on the MB Connected if they wanted them.
Won't that be up to your grandfather?
No, ma'am. I mean, Miss McCall.
Lace?
Yes, you know what I mean. But as for what you asked me, no. I reckon my grandpa plans on me taking over the ranch. It's high time he starts giving me some responsibility. And me hiring Thad and Bill is a good place to start. If he doesn't like it...
I've got a hunch he'll like it just fine.
I hope so, Mr. Morgan.
I think after all we've been through, you can call me Kid.
I don't know. After reading those dime novels about you, it seems sort of, disrespectful.
Well, don't worry about that.
Did you get that reward money all right, ma'am?
I did. I've already sent most of it back to my mother.
You plan to keep on bounty hunting?
It's the only thing I know.
The Kid and Lace had spent most of the past week in the Minger's finest suite, paid for by Conrad Browning's money, resting and recovering, and getting to know each other better. On more than one occasion during that time, the Kid had brought up the subject of Lace giving up bounty hunting, but she had always dodged the question. He knew she didn't want to give up the life she had made for herself, despite its dangers, and in truth, he couldn't blame her for feeling that way. He had done the same thing in his own life.
Then I reckon there's a chance our trails will cross again sometime. I'm going back to active duty with the Rangers as soon as this leg of mine heals up. In fact, it's really Ranger business that brought me here today.
Chasing another fugitive?
You could say that. There's an hombre I'm after.
He reached inside his coat for something, and when he brought out his hand and extended it, a silver star on a silver circle lay on his palm. It was a Ranger badge, but it wasn't the one belonging to Colhane. That badge was pinned to his shirt.
I talked to my captain, and he agrees with me. This is yours if you want it, kid.
The Loner, Book 13, Brutal Vengeance, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2012, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication prohibited. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, David Harris, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Stephen Carpenter, Nick DePinto, Drew Copus, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Keegan, Bradley Smith, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Danny Gavigan, Tim Getman, Casey Platt, Kimberly Gilbert, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler, Thomas Hogan, and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Valley, a Cotton Pickens Western, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in Graphic Audio.
You just cannot stay out of trouble for any time at all, can you, boy?
Preacher, you sure have good timing.
I always have. Might have showed up a few minutes earlier, though, since you only left one of the varmints for me to kill.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Family Jensen, number 3, The Violent Land.
Preacher, it is so good to see you again.
Well, it is mighty good to be here.
I'm glad the two of you were able to make it here today. I have a big supper planned.
Well, you two are flapping your gums. That varmint was about to shoot Preacher in the back.
Oh, no, he wouldn't, Matt. I figured you'd take care of him.
What if I hadn't been paying attention?
Well, I knew you would be. Smoke and meat taught you well enough.
Where'd you say you were from?
Germany. Prussia, to be precise.
What's this about a wagon train?
Baron Friedrich von Hoffmann is our leader. He's taking a large group of settlers to the American state called Wyoming. The Baron has bought a ranch there and intends to establish a town as well.
Sounds like a fellow with big plans.
Oh, help!
We gotta do something, Smoke. The Baron's had guards posted, but they won't be expecting something like that.
That's why you've got to get around them and warn everybody at the Raptor 9. Your horse is just as fast as mine or Preacher's, and you can organize a defense. There's no time to waste.
What about the two of you?
We're going to follow them. When they attack the ranch, we'll hit them where they least expect it. From behind.
Damn right we will. We'll have those varmints in a trap right where we want them.
It can't be.
I'm about to ride up there and see for myself. Want me to have the boys saddle a horse for you so you can come along with me?
Damned right I do. I want to see this with my own eyes.
It'll mean going onto that foreigner's range.
I don't give a damn about that. Pick out a dozen men to ride with us and tell them to be ready to fight.
Come on, Bat! We'll cover you!
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.